last week I talked a little bit about Aghore. Path of Aghore. The very definition of Aghore is that which is whole, that which is complete unto itself. Nothing is lacking from outside. This is our true self. The very definition of Aghore is Aghore Sahaj Hai. It is our inborn nature. This is what we are born with. Saral Hai. It is easy to comprehend. Sugam Hai. It is easy to walk on. So, how do we stay connected to our wholeness? Let's look at our own life. A child is born, child is very pure, child comes trusting. Child is totally vulnerable. Comes with the trust. It doesn't bring its supply of oxygen, lifelong supply of water, food, all the amenities. Comes trusting. As the child is raised in our environment, all kinds of ideas, concepts, yes, no, good, bad, is taught. Doubts, fears. But the true nature of the child is it's whole, it's complete, it's filled with trust. When the child leaps to the mother's lap, child is not thinking, is she going to hold him or drop him? He just leaps. You look at the lives of saints, after enlightenment, they become very childlike. So the Aghore begins with learning the art of letting go. Tyag, renunciation, giving up. There are so many different names for tyag. Letting go of what we have learned. Unless we learn how to let go, very difficult for new thing to arise. We have to create space. And it's really not new. It's our nature. That's what we were born with. But it has been covered under layers after layers after layers of covering. Our Aghor state of being is covered. Our wholeness is covered. You know, I'm sure you have heard the story of how they catch monkeys in India. This person who is going to catch the monkeys first detects a tree where there are many monkeys dancing on the treetops. Finds a vessel that has a narrow neck. Goes and digs a little hole and buries the pot under the tree, leaves the mouth open, puts a few nuts in it, and goes home. The monkey comes, puts his hand in the jar, gets a fistful of nuts, and then tries to pull it out. And that monkey will be doing that all night long. In the morning, the monkey catcher comes, puts a noose in its neck, tightens it up, taps on the hand with a stick, and the monkey lets go of the nuts and the hand comes out. But by then it's too late. He's got a noose in his neck. The monkey that was playing on the treetops, free, ends up in a cage and is shipped across the ocean in our labs. It's not only with the monkeys, this story runs so parallel to our human life. We got our fistful of nuts too. And we're caught. We don't know how to let go of it. Unless we let go of it, that freedom, that aghor, is very difficult to experience. Last week I talked about the wholeness and making an effort to connect with that wholeness that becomes your sadhana. You have your mantra, your friend that you repeat, that you sit with, that you confer with every day. It's good, but in order to enter aghor, it is said, empty your mind. That's the prerequisite, that you prepare yourself to enter by being empty. But lots of times, my experience has been that people are looking for a practice to calm their mind. But in aghor it says, before you enter with an empty mind. How can we experience that calmness of the mind? Through tyag. Tyag is the only way to experience that cleanliness. Tyag of what? Giving up of what? Start with simple little things. It's the little things that, because of which we create quarrel, we create disagreements in our own family. Small things. If each one of us looked in our own life that how I have created friction in my own family, with my own family members. What is it that's standing in my way? Can I free myself from it? Can I let go of it? This is called Tyag. This is called renunciation. Renunciation doesn't mean that just leaving your household and walking in the forest. The real renunciation, real tyag happens in within. That I am able to say, let him have it. You can have it. I have enough. I am grateful for what I have. Sometimes I have seen people, super rich people in India, haggling with poor rickshaw driver for a nickel. Very easily, oh, you can have that nickel. But the poor man has pulled them in the hot sun for miles on his bicycle rickshaw. And at the end, just the arguments. Sometimes I see I'm giving you this example from India, somehow just came in my mind as an example. You may not relate to it, but it happens everywhere. In our own life, there we know somebody can have a little more than I feel they deserve. When we are faced with that kind of situation, that we want to justify it, we want to put things straight, we want to let them know, that if we connect with our higher self, it's easy for me to let him have a little more. It's okay. I got better things to focus my time and energy on. Sometimes the joy that comes out just by giving. See how much free you feel and how rich you feel. But in the same time, if we get caught up in holding on to it, then we spend a lot more energy after that. How many of you have read the book Aghor Yoga? It's the basics. I would like you to read that book many, many more times. It's presented in a very simple language, but the essence is in that book. It begins with calling Pranamayi Bhagavati, the Divine Mother that resides in the form of prana. We call it Divine Mother, you could call it Divine Uncle, Divine Father, whatever name you prefer, doesn't really matter. What matters is acknowledge the sacredness of the breath. It is through that breath that essence, the divine essence, through the prana, the divine essence enters our body. It's not only a breath. Breath is just the medium. There is much more that comes in our body through that breath. Pranavayu is a ghor, at one time Baba has said. Much emphasis has been given in a ghor to that pranavayu, to the breath. In the beginning, we just make the breath as a tool for meditation. Breathing in, I'm paying attention to the breath coming in. Breathing out, I'm paying attention to the breath going out. Something deeper happens after that. When we are established in that stillness, and we stop even giving attention to the breath, there is no one to give attention to, there comes a state. The one who is paying attention, the one who is, what is being paid attention to, it all merges, it all becomes one. There is no separation in that moment. And that is a state of aghor. There is no separation. There is no good, bad, small, big, pleasant, unpleasant. So we have begun to walk on the path of aghor, but the aghor state of being is very clear, very easy, but at the same time it's very difficult also. It's beyond words. I can only just give you a glimpse through words. It's something to experience. But we must work on freeing ourselves from getting our mind caught in small things. Have to have our goal high. So your mind is free. Your body is light. Your heart is light. So when you sit with your mantra, there is inspiration to go somewhere. If the mantra, our goal is to bring a little peace in my life, it's not enough. You sit with that friend, the mantra. It's very hard to put that in words. The goal is not just to have a little fun. Like you could just think of you have a friend, a very special friend, that can take you all the way to enlightenment. You are sitting with that friend. You can just have a little idea, well, maybe I should just have a nice, fun time. Or if you are focused on the higher goal, you can go that far. What I'm trying to suggest today, that in your relationship with your mantra, keep your goal high. Don't only limit it to bring you a little momentary peace and joy in your heart. Your goal is so high that it's taking you towards that enlightenment. Mantra is not only a tool to still your mind. It's much more. A Ghor mantra is much more. By emptying my mind, calming my body, sitting in my wholeness, I sit with my friend. I confer with my friend. I'm not sitting with my friend while I'm agitated or I got plenty of things in my mind. I'm sitting in total wholeness. Then a different kind of wholeness descends, different kind of wholeness is experienced. In conversation, to give you a glimpse of wholeness, sometimes you find me saying, when you are happy, you are connected with your wholeness. But today I'm talking about a state that's even beyond happy. It has no label. It's beyond happy or sad or agitated. Can you imagine yourself when there is no label, emotional label on your being? There is no. You're not even thinking about whether you are happy or you are sad or you are full or you are empty. But that's how we have learned to connect with ourselves, by putting those labels. I'm so and so, and I'm happy, and I'm sad, and I'm excited, and I'm depressed. And that's how we experience ourselves in each moment. But there is a state that's just beyond these labels. I wake up in the morning. This is time to just sit with my mantra, or to think about my guru, or think about God. In that moment, I'm not thinking about myself, whether I'm happy or I'm sad. I sit up, and this is time to do it. Detaching myself from everything, and that detaching is called renunciation. Separating yourself from your story. Separating yourself from your even feelings. Because those things are just coverings, the layers on you. There is a part of you that's beyond all those. I don't want to talk too much. I'm not bored today because I see there are many levels. But I just wanted to touch and continue the theme. Please, for the next week, pay attention to pranavayu, the breath that you take, is not only air coming through the nostrils. Take a few moments to pay pay attention to the breath first, and almost imagine a glow around the breath. Start with imagination. That wherever breath is felt, imagine there is a glow around that breath that's entering your body. That's it for today. Baba would throw little pearls in a casual conversation. It was up to us to pick it up. So what's on your mind? Any questions? Anything made sense or I got you more confused?
Baba, I'm glad that you spoke about Apur that way. It makes me think about this ashram where many people come to find some peace and stillness, more meaning in their lives, just to experience the grounds and the calmness, but that the ashram is also a school, that there's endless opportunities to go deeper and grow and learn.
Read that book, Aghori Yoga, again and again. It's so simple. I wrote the whole book in one sitting. See if you can read it in one sitting. And there are many mysteries in there. Only if you can catch them. I think the second chapter is about, starts with cleaning your house. How do you clean your house? The analogy is so clear. Things accumulate in our house. And so read the book and compare the parallels in your life, that how, where you are, and how can you lighten yourself a little bit. I was with Baba in New York City. A gentleman came. He said, I had just dropped in the middle of the conversation. He said, Babaji, there is this building that I want to buy, and it's going to cost $5 million. Baba had no idea about this country. So, why? Why do you want to buy such an expensive building? Do you need it? You don't even have a wife and children. Why do you need such a big home? He said, yes, I don't have anyone, but when I came to this country, I didn't have any money. And now I have all this money. A part of me knows that why to get into this trouble, because this will only cause me more tension. But a part of me really wants to own it. And then he went on to say that he really knows that this is only going to cause to his worries, tension. It will cut his life short. And he really doesn't need to buy and invest in, but he has this money. So it's like having some time also causes that you got to do something with it. And I could see his agony. You know, he was not content with what he had. He was more worried about what to do with what he had. And looking at the bigger picture, he neither had a family in India nor here. He's just a single man, 70 years old. If he were living in India, this was the perfect time. People will come and, oh, now just sit in the temple and read Ramayana and sing. But here, that kind of environment is not supported. So he has to do what the rest do, the way the rest think. Baba tried to give him some sense, but I don't think he'll listen to him anyway. I woke up thinking about him this morning, that how sometimes we are trapped, and it's a commitment to the higher. The focus on that higher is can give us the strength to free ourselves. If we're not committed to that higher, then we get caught in between yes and no, neither this way nor that way. We're neither here nor there. There were two monks. One was an older one and a younger one. They were living together in a monastery. So the old one says to the young one, "What is this argument business? What is this? I have no idea." The young one said, "Oh, you have lived alone all your life, so..." He said, "No, but I really want to have an experience of it." So they were having breakfast. So the young one reached over and grabbed his bowl and pulled it, and he said, "This is mine." The old one said, "No, that's mine." The young one pulled it back again and said, "No, this is mine." And this went on 3-4 times, and then the old one said, "Okay, you have it if it's yours, then I don't care." And then he just sat there. The young one says, "We were just having an argument. But you ended it." So sometimes when we are caught in that, we don't see what we are doing, but there comes a time you have enough and you, just like the old one says, "Okay, if that's what makes you happy, you have it." And there is a freedom in that moment when you do that. Somebody just came yesterday and there was some family problem, inheritance. They said, "Well, we just decided that, let them have it. It's not worth causing all that lifelong bitterness." And we feel good about it. And I could feel when they were saying it, it was not just the words, they had really let go from the depth of their heart, the charge around it. And it was a good feeling to just even sit with them and share that moment.
So that feeling is that's liberation?
That's a liberation. Or you could hold on lifelong resentment.
Right.
Every time you think about that person, your body tightens up and you poison yourself with that anger and resentment. Or you really have let go from your heart. It gives you that freedom. There is a saying in India, "Gahara mar chit se diya utar." Gahara mar, the word that's used means like the... Mar means really beating. So the deep beating, if you really want to give somebody good thrashing, chit se diya utar, take him out of your heart. You may be angry at someone or resentful or can't stand him, they're still in your heart. Mm-hmm. If they weren't in your heart, you won't have all this charge around this. But taking somebody out from your heart is really a big punishment to that person. But you keep him in your heart and you keep that charge, then you are punishing yourself. Can we let go to the level that it doesn't affect us. Are we capable of it? Are we as a human being capable of it?
I think that's work, Babaji.
Hmm?
I think that's work. In the situation described with the emeritus, I could see that somebody might know that it's in their best long-term interest to let go of this thing, make the decision to let go of it, but also my own experience is that I live with a lot of people inside myself, and one of them's going to pop up one day and say, "You let go of it," you know, and then you got to deal with it when he pops up and put him aside. It seems like it's a continuous process, and maybe the voice is still there, but it gets a little weaker and a little weaker. It doesn't have any power over you after a while.
So once our focus becomes higher, when we begin to really ask, what's the purpose of this life? Why am I living? What am I doing? What am I living for? The more we keep entertaining those questions, really start looking at ourselves. Why I do whatever I do? Where am I going? Otherwise, it's just the groundhog day. Is that a real word in Hindi, or is it related to that movie? We have to keep our focus high, goal high. That's what really helps. That's my personal experience. That I have no time for this. Like Mark said, it's easy to let go of small things. But it's a good practice. First, start letting go of small things. Once you taste the taste of letting go by small things, you will develop the ability to let go of bigger things. And it's a very powerful practice. You really choose one thing and decide that, okay, I'm really freeing myself from it. I'm letting go of it. When it presents itself, when the charge presents itself, make it a part of practice. And say no to it. Start with one thing. And you will see that this really one thing becomes a very powerful practice. People do that. They do that with the addictions, for example. But looking at you, I don't think you have addictions. So... So start with one thing that's limiting you in your social way of being. Something that disturbs your inner wholeness.
Babaji, I have a question. You were talking about, you say your mantra to experience peace. And sweetness and so forth. Know that you can also do your mantra to experience the bigger picture. I don't know if you use the word enlightenment, but so what happens? I mean, what's the process? How does that happen where you're using your mantra in your words to open something up to get to that condition?
When you sit with your mantra, your goal is oneness with God. The goal is not just stilling your mind or feeling good. So keep the goal high. you sit with that anticipation that you don't know when that moment is going to arise. If your goal is just to feel good and keep your mind a little calm, that's a very small goal. Keep the goal high and then sit. The whole purpose of saying that was, lots of times people take on a practice just to bring a little peace in their life. But the goal of practice is not only that, it's much bigger. And once we have a higher goal, then it's easier. Make any sense? Let's go have some chai.